having a bad day. But help is on the way. And his name is Chef Ramsay.
I'm here to rent the apartment.
Suburban Commando.
Honey, it's for you.
It's Hulk Hogan, like you've never seen him before. Skateboarding, child raising, crime fighting.
It's an illness.
Charlie Wilcox has just discovered the solution for all life's problems.
Leave a message or take a seat.
I said take a seat. Funny, that's real funny.
Sometimes I just get carried away.
I'm just your landlord. I bring you an extra bar of soap when you need it.
For being a target for intergalactic bounty hunters is a little out of my line.
I was frozen today.
Hulk Hogan.
What a nervous guy.
Christopher Lloyd. Suburban Commando.
You got any idea what we're gonna do to you?
You're gonna pound my face.
What, are you nuts? This is the 90s. We're gonna sue you.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever it is, wherever you are. My name is Malachi J. Matthews, this is Super Tap Film Club, and I am joined this week by one quarter of the Deathmatch Outlaws. He's the Bud Light King, you know him from the likes of Rise Wrestling and WAW down in Norwich. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Danny Darko to the show. How are you going, mate? You all right?
Hey, yo, yeah, I'm doing good. I just finished work and I'm ready to get down to it.
Darko, do you want to tell everyone what it is that you do when you do your wrestling thing?
I'm the Bud Light King, Danny Darko. The name, pretty much self-explanatory. A bit of a mix between Sandman, I do some comedy stuff in it, and generally I can do some normal wrestling, but I think I'm most well known for Deathmatch, the blood and guts stuff.
I had the pleasure of doing a couple of shows with you before the apocalypse happened, a year or two ago now. So, Danny Darko, please tell the ladies and gentlemen what it is we've done this week on Super Tap Film Club.
We are watching the 90s classic, Suburban Commando, featuring Hulk Hogan as your leading man, featuring Christopher Lloyd and a woman from Shining.
Yeah, Shelley Duvall as the mum in this. 1991. Now, I take it, are you a fan of Hulk Hogan films then, Darko?
I'm a big fan of Hulk Hogan films. I'm a big, big fan.
When we first talked about you doing this, you said you wanted to do this, either this or Mr. Nanny.
Yeah, well, I know he did a bunch of movies, but really, there's only three Hulk Hogan movies. That's No Holds Barred, that's Suburban Commando, and that's Mr. Nanny. The rest of them are more like TV movies.
Yeah, well, we did, we've done No Holds Barred a couple of weeks ago on the show, and we did Santa with Muscles a couple of Christmases ago, and that is fucking rotten, that film.
Yeah, it's very much, it may have been in the cinemas, I don't know, but it's a TV movie.
But this one did get a cinema release. I actually saw this one in the cinema on Boxing Day, 1991.
No, I would have been 4 years old, and I don't think I went to the cinema until I was like 10, cheap parents. Yeah. I remember I watched this, there's a around a friend's house, recorded on tape, complete with adverts and everything.
As Darko said, Hulk Hogan playing Shep Ramsey, the lead in this. Now, the cast is a little bit weird. You got Christopher Lloyd and Shelley Duvall from The Shining as the parents in this film. And she just seems to play, like, I don't know. Not, she's not necessarily downtrodden, but she seems to be at her wit's end with Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, she doesn't really have much of a character at all. She's only in it, like, maybe 20 minutes in the whole movie.
It seems odd to see Christopher Lloyd in a role like this as well.
Yeah, was he not a bigger star in 91? From Back to the Future?
Yeah, it wouldn't have. Yeah, Back to the Future 2 and 3 would have been like the year before this, I would have thought.
Funny, because like I did a little research, I don't know how true it is, but apparently it was originally written as a project for Danny DeVito and Schwarzenegger. I wonder if some of these people were cast beforehand and then had the carpet pulled out from underneath them.
And ended up with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, if they'd done this movie, would we have got twins with Christopher Lloyd and Hogan?
Yeah.
Maybe we would have got Junior.
It would have been interesting to see a pregnant Hogan. I don't know. I don't know whether that's going to work for Hogan, brother.
Twins would have been weird, but Junior, I think, would work with Hogan. Given birth to a little Hulkster, it would have been great.
The movie begins, well, it looks like Star Wars, a knockoff version of Star Wars done for hardly any money whatsoever. It's even got the same shot of the ship coming in.
It looks like the same ship, the same shape and everything.
It's got, well, they're not X-Wings, but things that look a bit like X-Wings flying around. Whilst on the bridge of the ship, General Souter, the villain of the piece, he's with the president of the, I don't know what country or what world he's from, but he's the president, and he's held captive being forced to watch this low-budget cosmic devastation that's going on the screen in front of him. Yours will be the fourth conquered world. So he's done this three times before, but the president is refusing to bow down to the demands of this space prick. Alarms! Alarms! Sirens are flashing. Ramsay! It's the Hulkster, and he's clanging and banging, but he's not doing it down on Venice Beach this time, brother. It's his metal boots, his big clanky metal rocket boots.
Yeah, his big kiss boots.
He's got a headband, he's got gloves. It gives him power of 10 men. Not that he needs it. Not that he needs it, Danny, because he's Hulk Hogan. But it does. It gives him that little bit of extra metallic boost. A little bit more clang and bang. All guns are blazing, and there's loads of guys that look like stormtroopers, but they're dressed in black, and they've got really long white ponytails. Some of them, their makeup makes them look like badger people. Badger men. And did you notice one of those long-haired punks was Brutus the Barber Beefcake?
Yeah, he's not the last one that's going to appear in this movie either.
Hulk Hogan, through some lift shenanigans, ends up exploding his way onto the bridge. Do you think that the pitch for this was, right, okay, imagine, it's the start of Star Wars, but it's Hulk Hogan rescuing the president. That is probably what somebody said in an office.
Yeah, it must have been.
Chucks a dude into a glass cabinet full of skulls, because that's what every bad villain has in the bridge of their ship. The captive president pulls a bit of metal out of his sleeve or off the chair, a little bit like Gambit from the X-Men, and he throws this bit of metal across the room, and it cuts the villain's hand clean off. So Christ knows what this metal was made out of. General Suter's eyes turn green, jade green eyes. A green scaly lizard fist emerges from the stump on his hand, and he grabs the president and he chokes him out. Negotiations have ended, in his evil lizard man alien voice.
He grabs the president by the neck, and then Hogan just legs it. He just legs it. He's like, nah, screw this, I'm off.
Jumps into a pipe with his rocket boots going, dropping bombs all the way down. Gets out into an escape pod and he's spinning uncontrollably until he manages to switch the tractor beam on, and his ship starts to pull him back into his spaceship. Well done, Ramsay. Millions are in your debt. Yeah, whatever. What's next? Hulk Hogan ain't got time for congratulations, Darko. He's like, what? Give me, what have you got? You've got to have something on the books. Maybe a tyrant exterminator. No, none of that. None of it's available. Galactic narc duty. That's not even happening either. And he says, what about a big bug hunt with creatures that bleed acid, like in Aliens? And they go, you can't do that. It's already been done. You're Hulk Hogan. You're just too big. You're too beefy for that kind of space activity. Zanuck, who's the guy he's talking to, suggests that Hulk... All the names in this, they might as well be called, like, Zig and Zag from the planet Blog. They haven't really thought about them. But he's called Shep Ramsay.
Yeah, Shep Ramsay is a badass 90s name.
But his commander suggests that, he says, that, you know, you're stressed out. You need to have a holiday. Hogan says he's not stressed out, and he punches the console in his ship and then breaks it with his big beefy fists. It's like, now you've done it. Now you've got to wait. You've got to find somewhere and chill out for a bit. And it's going to take you 6 weeks to charge your space car back up. Like, what am I going to do for 6 weeks? Just find somewhere, recharge, settle down, relax, mingle, have a good time. And it turns out that the closest place for him to settle down for 6 weeks is Earth. And Hulk Hogan hates Earthlings. He's like, oh no, Earth. I fucking hate Earthlings. And to be honest, the way he acts in this film, it's like he doesn't like anyone at all.
No.
Yeah, he's really aggressive.
Yeah, he doesn't like Earthlings, but he doesn't know anything about Earth, and he just gets there and starts beating people up.
And I think that's, you know, his main... That's his main motivation for his acting in this. Hogan, you don't understand a thing that's going on. Just look confused at stuff. On Tap Club, we talk about films that end with either a rock song or a rap song, which tells the story of the film that you've just watched. You get it a lot in Nightmare on Elm Street. Freddy even does a rap at the end of that. He does it himself. He does it with the Fat Boys. This film, thinking outside the box, Darko, they do the rap song about the movie at the start of the film, and Hulk Hogan's even singing on it.
Don't we just get the hook over and over again?
J-Rock and Hulk Hogan. I didn't realise it was actually him until I was doing it with the subtitles on, and it came up as J-Rock and Hulk Hogan. A lovely place to visit. So that's, you know, thinking outside the box. On Earth, we see a Poindexter human, Christopher Lloyd, Charlie Wilcox. He's the head of the Wilcox family. He's in his workshop. He loves his workshop, Danny. He's sitting in there fiddling with stuff. He's fixing skateboards. You know, he's doing general dad activities that you love to do in a shed.
But yeah, they don't really explain what he's doing in the shed much, do they? It's not like a lab or anything like that. It's just some shed.
He's fixing a skateboard at the start, isn't he?
You don't need a whole workshop for fixing skateboards.
The equipment that he's got in there that you see later on is the sort of stuff that you had in woodwork at school, of which Hulk Hogan uses to clang and bang outside in the garden, but we'll get to that in a bit. The mum of the family, as we've already mentioned, is Shelley Duvall from The Shining. She's really worried about money. Bills are piling up. If only Christopher Lloyd would be a little bit more confident, because he's working for this horrible 90s business douche, and it, as is usually the situation with the jobs in these sorts of films, he's working for an architect and he's just a yuppie bastard. His wife wants him to get a raise, but he's just saying, I can't ask for the raise now, honey. It's just not that simple. He's scared he's going to lose his job. He's a Poindexter. If only there was somebody that could come and teach Christopher Lloyd some confidence, Danny. If only. Charlie is a pushover, a doormat. He says, I'm playing it safe for you and the kids. That's his problem. He's always playing it safe. He said, I can be daring when I want to be. And he promises his wife he'll ask for the raise. But obviously, he just totally bottles it. And he ends up letting his shitty boss walk all over him and take the credit for the architecture work the blueprints he's been working on all weekend. His boss is played by Larry Miller. Now, Larry Miller, he is a character actor that always plays the same guy in every film that he does.
Yeah, I didn't know his name, but I'm a big fan.
I remember him from the Nutty Professor movies. That's all I can really remember him from off the top of my head. He generally plays the same sort of character. He's the weedy businessman that just wants all the credit. But yeah, he's taking the credit for all of Doc Brown's hard work that he's been doing all weekend. Even taking credit for the French Arch. As is with any sort of 90s business situation, this is all to impress Japanese businessmen. That's what it was all about then. It probably still is now. I haven't got a mind for business. Maybe if I did, I'd be having conversations with these people.
With Japanese businessmen.
Maybe, yeah. Hogan's ship crash lands on Earth and he hides it in an abandoned roller disco because disco is dead, brother. No one's going to this roller disco. He switches on the power and the neon lights and general disco stuff come on. And he's just like, fucking earthlings. I hate it. I hate disco. I hate earthlings. I've been here 5 minutes and I can't see this getting any better. Where's me transformer? He goes looking for it. The Hulkster is here on Earth under the cover of disco. Hulkster then heads into town for a stroll around to get, you know, to get his bearings, to see where he is, while bad 90s pop reggae plays. Now, there's a lot of that in this movie. There's a lot of bad 90s reggae music in this, but it isn't even reggae music. Hogan looks confused by everything. Absolutely everything that's going on, and he's got a proper arsey face.
I think most of his scenes are him going bog-eyed and just looking left to right very slowly.
He gets a bit of that in. He likes a grunt, does Hogan. There's a barber there just shouting at him, brandishing a broom. Fuck off, spaceman. Not interested. He might be an alien, Darko, but these earthling women, they're only human, and they're all swooning at him. Who is this sexy space beef that's come down and is just wandering around the precinct now? Everyone wants a slice of Hogan, and the song is saying, hey now, it's a lovely time for a vacation.
Even at his height, was Hogan ever a sex symbol?
I don't know. This is what I was thinking the other day when I got up early and I was watching Cheers, and I thought, was Ted Danson ever sexy? Because he's like the sexy man in that program. I don't get it. Same sort of thing with Hulk Hogan. Maybe it's because he's American and dependable.
It must be the skullet.
It's the gold. They're blinded by gold. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think it's because they say bald man are more virile, but then he's also got the hair, hasn't he? So.
Yeah, you got the best of both worlds there. Hulk Hogan frees a dog from a hot car. The sun is beating down. The dog owner is sat outside a restaurant shouting at it. It's like, shut up, Ralph. Shut up, dog. Hulk Hogan is not having this. He frees the dog, swaps him round, he does a Terminator, takes his clothes, and then binds the man up in the car in the muzzle, lets the dog have a lovely meal at the restaurant, and he just walks off with the guy's no doubt stinking clothes on, with his spacesuit in a duffel bag, and he sees a piece of paper stapled to a lamppost that just says apartment for rent and an arrow. He pulls down the notice and he follows the one. It's literally is. It just says apartment and an arrow. And he's like, oh, right, this is a map. And he follows it across the street over the other side of the road. Now, Charlie returns home from his terrible day being a doormat at work. His neighbours are a load of grease monkeys working on drag racers, racing cars, and a NASCAR, whatever they are. Do they call NASCARs NASCARs, or are they NASCAR cars?
The thing is, with that whole scene, I think Charlie's being a bit of a dick. They just park on the other side of the road.
But they're using Charlie's parking spot, blocking his drive. But just like his boss, they just walk all over him. It's time to get over the other side of the road. Get over there! If only Christopher Lloyd was a little bit more confident. If only. We need an intergalactical beef angel to save him, Darko. That's what we need. As Charlie pulls up and goes to get out of his car, some youths razz past him dead fast in a car that looks like a Trans Am, but it's painted up like a shark. Nobody likes him. Nobody likes him apart from the colonel. He's the drunk old army dude that lives next door. He's sitting, drinking, in a wheelless jeep that's got flowers planted in the bonnet on his lawn. Oh, he's the crazy-eyed doctor from the Cannonball Run movies that I used to love as a kid. And he just tells him to, you know, get some fucking balls. Get some fucking balls, Charlie Wilcox.
It seems like I've seen that character in other stuff as well.
Yeah.
He must have been in other movies, if not the same actor, exactly the same gimmick.
Basically the same character in the Cannonball Run movies. That's the only thing I can remember him from, but I looked him up on IMDb and he was in hundreds of things. Christopher Lloyd returns home and Shelley is waiting for him, dressed up like 80s Cher, in a cat suit and a curly wig, looking all hot. But Charlie isn't interested. He said, "Oh, I had a terrible day, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm not in the mood. What's wrong with you? You've been watching your TV again. It's giving you ideas. It's giving you sexy ideas. And all he wants to do, Daddy, he just wants to go chill out in his shed. I want to go and fix a skateboard. I want to drill a hole in something. I want to hammer something with my hammer." He goes out to the shed to find that Charlie's horrible day is about to get a lot worse, because Shelley, in the space of a day, has converted his shed into what she calls a rentable apartment. And it's just totally done up like an apartment. It's no longer a shed. It's no longer a shed, Daddy.
Well, that's the thing. Like, again, Charlie's just being a bit of a dick, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
How often are you going to fix the skateboard? It feels like there was like a whole nother part of this movie trying to insinuate that Charlie was an inventor or something. He's not. He's a bit of a knob.
That's what the thing. I always remember it from watching it as a kid. I always remember him as being an inventor, but he doesn't. He's not doing anything. He's an architect. He doesn't need a workshop. He just needs a desk.
Yeah, he could have a studio maybe, but not a workshop.
But she's turned it into an apartment and she's stuffed all of his tools into one cupboard. It's a right mess. And he's going, "For fuck's sake, Shelley, where am I going to fix skateboards now?" While he's saying this, the doorbell rings. Charlie answers the door to see Intergalactic Beefcake there, Shep Ramsey at the door, brandishing the notice about the apartment in his hand. It's just like, "I'm here to rent the apartment!" Because Hulk Hogan is just really aggressive to these people that he's wanting to move in with. And then when he is living with them, he is just arsey for the whole film.
He's, again, another knob. He doesn't like earthlings, does he? That's the problem.
That's it. He's basically Earth racist.
and the real world races.
Yeah, Hogan's in and he's literally got his feet under the table. He doesn't understand what kids are. He's like, "What are these? Are these yours?" And he holds up their kids and he's just like, "Put the kids down, come and sit down, I've cooked you some dinner." He sits down at the table and he eats all of the food, being really stroppy the whole time. He tells them he's from France, which is ludicrous, and they believe him. They say, "Oh, very romantic. Ooh la la." But Charlie, he's a clever man. He's a man with a workshop, Daddy. He's like, something's not right here. He doesn't sound very French to me.
It's not my first skateboard.
He's got his suspicions, so he watches Hulk Hogan. He watches him stash a laser gun under his bed. As Hogan goes out of his new apartment, Christopher Lloyd sneaks into his room and he gets the blaster out from the bed and he starts fiddling around with it. He shoots a hole through the wall. He peeps through the hole to see that he has accidentally blown up the neighbor's car that they were working on earlier on.
Like, that had no provocation whatsoever to go in there and start digging through his stuff, did it?
In the next scene, the next morning, that car hasn't exploded. They're still working on that same car. So he doesn't get... There's no repercussions for him even blowing up the car either. But because Christopher Lloyd has been fiddling around with all the space flotsam, it's sent off a signal to space so that the baddies can now trace the signal for the equipment. Now they know where Hulk Hogan is. They've locked on and they're sending down two beefy bounty hunters in wax jackets, one of which is The Undertaker, and it's Ginger Mullet Undertaker from 1991. I'd forgotten that he was in this.
Yeah, I think this is actually before he debuted, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure. This is what I was thinking, because he debuted in 1991. So it was the same year.
But that would have been November, because it was Survivor Series.
Oh, yes.
So it would be very close.
Very, very close, yeah. Like I say, I watched this the Christmas that it came out. I remember the whole thing with the Survivor Series situation with the magazines, where it had Ted DiBiase's team, but it had The Undertaker blacked out, and it just had a question mark, and we were like, who the fuck is this? And then when this terrifying man turned up, like, oh my God! And I totally forgot he was in it. Funnily enough, this is the only film that he's actually in.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I'm sure he'll be in a load of trash now, like, the next couple of years, but, like, over, what is it, near 30 years now? He only did one movie. Well, he missed his calling, that's for sure.
Yeah.
he's got one of those movie star voices.
Oh, yeah, he has. Well, he hasn't in this. He's got the voice of a child in this. Charlie decides that he's going to get rid of Hulk Hogan. He's talking to himself in the mirror, just going, I'm going to tell Darth Vader, look, you got to go. This is not an ideal situation. Again, he's being a dick. His wife's worried about money. She can get some money out of Hulk Hogan. Actually, where's Hulk Hogan going to get his money from to pay the rent for the 6 weeks that he's there? I didn't think about that.
No, it's Hulk Hogan. He's probably just going to leave, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just going to fuck off.
Yeah, fuck the Earthlings.
He decides he's going to tell Hulk Hogan to go back to space. There's no room for you in the garage. He goes outside, but Hogan is clanging and banging on the front lawn, using a bandsaw in one hand and a big drill in the other, the sort of thing that you get in woodwork at school. And he doesn't listen. He doesn't listen to Christopher Lloyd at all. He just carries on pumping his pythons and looking at them and going, and that's it. He just ignores him. Hogan hears Shelley screaming from inside the house, so he rushes inside. But she's just watching a TV about primal screams. And again, it's Earth stuff. It's Earth stuff. He's like, what the fuck are you doing screaming? She says, it's a TV show. It's Marsha. Have you never seen it? Of course he's not seen it. He doesn't understand anything. Then he attacks the poor postman. The postman goes to put a letter through the door. He pulls a knife on him because he doesn't understand the post. The things he doesn't understand, Darko, he's very violent towards as well.
I think that's supposed to be a reference to the weird throwing metal sheet from earlier. What's he going to do, just drop it on the floor? It's not going to cut anyone's hand off, is it?
They're stood outside the house, and Shelley's explained to him how you're not allowed to kill the postman on Earth, and a paperboy just chucks a newspaper at him and it just boshes him in the face. She then has to stop him from murdering a child. Just like, you cannot kill that boy because he's chucked a paper at you. This is where I spotted the continuity error, that the neighbours are working on the car that Charlie blew up the previous night. It's there. It's just there. Hogan has a go on a kid's skateboard.
See, that's what I'm talking about. This movie was improvised. I reckon they were all just standing around with their thumbs up their asses, and they're like, what do you think is going to be funny? And they're like, I'll chuck him on a skateboard.
He falls on his ass, and the kids all laugh at him. They're like, even my mum can stay on longer than that. Hogan pulls his what you gonna do, brother face, at children, and he picks up the board and he just throws it into space. Fuck your Earthling skateboard. There you go. That's your Saturday ruined, you little bastards. And the kids all run away. There's a little bit throughout this film. Every day Charlie gets stuck at the in a weird red light race with an old lady and some other guy. But he always loses and gets stuck in everyone's dust in the middle of the road. Because at the end he blows up the traffic lights, and everyone cheers.
The whole traffic light bit takes up so much time in the movie as well. It's always like a good 30, 40 seconds, and we've just seen the same thing over and over again.
The Colonel gets on with Hulk Hogan because they just talk about war, and he's sat there talking about strategies of the old days. And the Colonel says to him, a little bit of Earthling knowledge that Hogan takes that and he plants it. He says, sometimes, Hulk Hogan, sometimes you got to lose to win. Wise words. Wise words, old man.
Said Hogan doesn't do the job.
Charlie gets back from work, and Hogan sees with his own space eyes just how badly people treat him in the street. He's like, this isn't right. He's trying to get back into his parking space. There's a drag racing car there, so Hogan goes and he picks up the front of the racer, blocking the drive, and he lets Charlie in. The guys next door say, hey Goldilocks, these cars are $30,000 each. You got any idea what I'm going to do to you? And Hogan says, let me guess. You're going to pound my face, break every bone in my body. Then you're going to drag me across a gravel road and feed my remains to a warthog. Is that about right? And he goes, no, are you mental? This is the 1990s. We're going to sue you because you touched our shit. Hogan's like, what kind of a pussweed world is this? I just wanted that man to fight me and feed me to a warthog. Why would he know what a warthog is as well? If he doesn't know what things are from Earth, why would he know what a warthog is?
The whole speech is a weird flex. Yeah. It's almost like bordering on fetishism.
Yeah.
I've never gone up face to face with somebody in a bar and said, are you gonna beat me up? Are you going to beat me up? I'm going to tell you how to beat me up.
Yeah. I mean, some people do pay good money for that. Two douchey punk kids listening to cop rock narrowly avoid running over the skateboarding child of Charlie's boy, Mark. They smash the board to bits, driving over it in their sports car. Hulk Hogan dives in the way and he saves the boy. Hogan's had enough. He begins to do his grunting. And he starts running and jumping over garden fences. Now he's in the path of the car in the middle of the road. Like, whoa, rad! But Hulk Hogan, he's not here for fun times. He's here to flip over the car. He flips over the car and he does what he does in a lot of films. He rips the car door off. That's one of his film trademark things. He loves to do it. And he drags the kids out of the car. And again, Charlie has to stop. Somebody has to stop Hulk Hogan from murdering a teenager again. Shelley Duvall, in appreciation of all the stuff, she said, thank you for all the good deeds that Hulk Hogan's done in this one afternoon that he's been here. Bear in mind, this is like one afternoon that he's been here.
Yeah, all the good deeds. He's like, I get he saved the kid's life. And he moved the drag race, but that's about it, isn't it?
That's all he's done, yeah. That's all he's done.
He causes a fight with a neighbour, and then he saves the kid's life. So I think saving a kid's life is probably enough to warrant some chocolate cake.
Well, yeah, it is, yeah. But of course, Dally, it's an earth cake, so he doesn't understand it. He's just, and he picks it up and starts shoveling it into his face. He says, you people eat this? Confused by earth cake. Charlie gets a photo, a family photo, with the family and the confused man beast just shoveling down cake. In real life, he wouldn't touch a chocolate cake, brother. No way. A lot of this film is Hogan wandering around town being confused about things, as we say. And that isn't even really an exaggeration, is it? Because that is what happens for most of the film. Hogan gets confused by a car alarm. He pulls the talking car alarm out of the car and he crushes its puny earth voice box. I've fallen and I can't get up. The car is... Everyone's scared of Hogan. Even the cars. Inanimate objects. Hogan meets a mime in the street and this just blows his fucking melon. He's stuck in a force field. A K7 force field. Don't worry, I'll break you out of there. And he punches the poor guy straight squaw in his chops. Bosh. And he just leaves him there. Punches him and leaves him. Charlie is following Hogan to see where he's hiding his ship. He's on the trail. He found the laser gun and he blew up the car with no consequences whatsoever. So, in for a penny, in for a pound, follow the spaceman, see what he's fucking doing. But he's in an arcade, confused by arcade machines, surrounded by children. He's like, use your phasers! I can't, I'm in hyperspace! Give it up, Dragos, give it up! He's actually playing Afterburner, which is a playing game, and it doesn't go to space, Danny. I don't know if you know that.
Nah, yeah, I played Afterburner. It feels like this. There's a good 15-20 minutes in this movie that are just random things happening for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, he plays the game that hard that it explodes. The game explodes, and out of its maintenance hatch waves a surrender flag, and they're like, yeah, you've beaten the game. It's like, what game? That was like real life. And the kids love Hogan, but he hates them. He's confused by them. He bumps into the mime again, and he's doing it. This time, he's doing a climbing up a ladder mime. So Hulk Hogan grabs him and chucks him up into a balcony. He just keeps... He doesn't understand.
He just keeps harassing this one guy over and over again. He's coming at him.
Charlie finds the spaceship, and he puts on Hulk Hogan's space armor. While he's got the armor on, he ends up saving a woman from some street punk scum, and he gets shot and he falls over and he leaves a bit of the equipment on the floor in a warehouse where he fights these ne'er-do-wells. The bounty hunters, however, have locked onto the signal in Earth because of Charlie again fiddling around with all the space flotsam. While they're on the way down, they see the skateboard flying through space like a satellite that Hogan has chucked into space and ruined a kid's Saturday. The next bump in the road that Hogan gets to is there's a little girl with a cat stuck in a tree. Now, Danny, did you recognise this girl at all?
No, I can't say I did.
It's Elizabeth Moss. She was the lead in The Invisible Man that came out last year. This was the first film that she was ever in.
Wow, I haven't seen it, but apparently Invisible Man's good. I'll have to check it out.
It is. Invisible Man's it is really good. I don't usually like that much modern horror because I'm firmly placed within the 80s and 90s, but yeah, it's good.
It's got to be better than The Mummy, hasn't it?
I haven't watched the Tom Cruise Mummy film because everyone said it was so bad.
Real bad, real bad.
Hulk Hogan walks over to this little girl that's crying in the street and he goes, "What? What is wrong with you?" She says, "Dad, but my cat is stuck in the tree." So Hulk Hogan pulls down the tree, the branch, and she says, "That's not my cat." He lets go of it. Hilarity flings the cat away into the distance. Hulk Hogan then says, "I hate suburbia. You've been there one day and you just root. In fact, you've been there a day and you're hassling everybody else. You're the one that's causing the problems here, Hulkster, if anything. Chucking skateboards and cats into space. Come on, mate."
He's killing cats at random.
It's not on. The next scene, because like Danny says, it is literally 10 minutes of just him going from one plot device to another. Next thing is there's an old lady testing melons, and he does a little bit of acting here, Danny. I don't know if you noticed it. This is where you see some of his good acting work. He looks at the fruit and he seems to portray with his face, this fruit smells nice, and do you know what? I'm hungry, and he rubs his belly. That's acting, mate. That's acting. Crushes a melon in the woman's face.
Yeah, that's Joey from Friends acting.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like he's eating that meat trifle. Hogan realises that Charlie has been fiddling with all his space stuff, so he storms into his office while he's in a meeting. He does his grunt acting and growling into the face of Margie, the receptionist. But she's totally into Hulk Hogan. She's like, "Ooh." She says, "My, what a big one." And she's like, "Who is this space beef? Who is this golden god that has come into the office here? And he's being really rude to me, if I'm honest." She tells him to take a seat. And obviously, he picks up the chair as if to take it. You know, that's comedy 101, that is. Hogan confronts Charlie and he's like, "Why have you been fiddling with my shit? The Undertaker's on his way now. Jesus Christ, I've only been here a day. I'm supposed to be here for 6 weeks to charge the car up. I'm going to have to go now. You fucking ruined it. You're not going to get your rent." He's like, "Right, okay, I'll take you to the place where I saved the girl. I've dropped a bit of equipment. We'll go and we'll find it." They go outside and they get to Charlie's tiny car. Hulk Hogan can't be asked to wait for Christopher Lloyd to open it. So again, he just rips the door off because that is his trademark movie move. He does it twice in this one. Bounty hunters are on their way and it's all Charlie's fault. They go to the warehouse to find the gun that Charlie dropped while saving the girl, but it isn't there. It has got a homing device in it. Hulk Hogan has got a machine so he can track it.
Yeah, he can track the gimmicks. He can also find ghosts for that, I believe.
Yes, it's the Ghostbusters PKE meter from the first two Ghostbusters films. And they haven't even changed it. There it is, just
exactly the same.
Yeah. I mean, usually when they put different props in different films, when we spotted it on Super Tap before, oddest one was the guns from Barbarella turning up in an Italian post-apocalyptic film. But they changed them a little bit. This, they're like, no, they might as well have gone, "Well, we'll find it with this Ghostbusters thing."
Yeah, well, they might need it again, might they?
They follow the Ghostbusters device to a bank job that has gone down. It turns out the gun that Christopher Lloyd had dropped was a freeze ray. They never mentioned that before, but it's a freeze ray. They get there and there's a frozen cop outside wobbling, pretending to be frozen. And they go inside and the street punks have pulled a bank job and everyone inside the bank is frozen, looking like 60s Batman when Mr. Freeze has kicked off somewhere. That's what it looks like. All of the people are wobbling because they're filming them for far too long. These people shouldn't be standing still for this long in the shots. And they play Christmas music, Jingle Bells, and it's not Christmas.
It's classic comedy, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that is, again, it is. You look at comedy, there's a frozen old lady holding a dog.
Wobbling back and forth.
Yeah. Of course, Hogan thwarts the bank robbery immediately. One of the punks shoots Hogan with the freeze ray, but the freeze ray doesn't work on him.
Because he's got antifreeze.
Yeah, because he drinks antifreeze. I mean, that's not a good look, is it, to put in a fucking kids film? How many kids do you think drank antifreeze after this? It wouldn't happen now.
Well, no, that's probably the plan, though, because he hates the kids.
Oh,
he?
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
So it's all a trick. A long-term plan.
During the fracas, Christopher Lloyd, obviously, for comedy gold, gets frozen. So Hulk Hogan has to take him home with him standing out the sunroof. He says it takes 20 minutes for this to wear off, but by the time he's got home, it's dark. It's clearly late that evening, so Christopher Lloyd was under for a long time. But he's just got him propped up against his spaceship.
It was 20 minutes for health and safety. Why don't you just wait?
Yeah. I like this scene. This is when the bounty hunters blow up a drive-through surfing burger because the guy has the audacity to suggest that this is two men that are married. He's like, no! We're not having that. We're blowing it up.
Yeah, another joke that would not fly today.
No, no. He says he thinks they're newlyweds. And the Undertaker gives a disgruntled look and blows it up. Hogan's ship is now totally fucked. The engine has exploded. He's like, right, that is it. It's all fucked. I can't go back. I'm going to have to stay here forever now. If only there was some kind of massive crystals. And Christopher Lloyd goes, massive crystals? You need massive crystals. As it goes, at the start of this film, I noticed in my boss's office, he's got fucking loads of massive crystals, and they're just the type that you need to put in your spaceship to get it back up and running again. He's like, where are they? Oh, they're in a cabinet in his office, and he's having a party tonight, a business douche party for the Japanese businessmen. We'll sneak in. We'll sneak in and we'll get them sorted. I mean, that is convenient. Is that not convenient?
What are the chances? Not only does he have the crystals, but Doc Brown just happens to know that they're the right crystals. You tell.
They look like the sort of award that you'd give to an estate agent.
Frosted glass writing on it.
Or from a daytime game show, like 100 to 1 or something like that. Very convenient, very convenient. The Hulkster and Charlie head to the office dressed in tuxedos. It's a business party for the Japanese business guys. They sneak in undetected. Meanwhile, the bounty hunters have arrived. They land on a helipad on top of the building, and their spaceship is shaped like a beetle, which I quite liked. Nice. The crystals, Danny, are no longer in the boss's office. Oh no, peril. But it's all right. They've just been moved somewhere else. Unconveniently, they're now right in front of the boss who's talking to the Japanese businessmen, but they just go and get them anyway, so the whole point that they've been moved isn't even a point worth mentioning.
Yeah, it's just an extra couple of minutes in the plot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. The bounty hunters burst through the wall. Hulk Hogan is face to face with them, and he says, tag, you're it. They have a bit of this thing, they have a bit of a... an iron bar bend off here. The first bounty hunter bends the iron bar, then he hands it to the Undertaker, and he bends it back, and he gives it to Hulk Hogan, and he bends it into the shape of a rabbit like it's a balloon animal at a kid's party. The names of the bounty hunters, by the way, are Knuckles and Hutch. Hutch is the Undertaker. Knuckles is the other mulleted guy. Hulk Hogan just goes over and he gives him a double chop on his shoulders. Ugh! And Knuckles falls through the floor with the power of Hogan's beefy fists. He just goes. Undertaker fires up his rocket boots and he fights Hulk Hogan. They're smashing through posts. You've got general rocket boot shenanigans. You can imagine it. They're going round in circles and stuff like that. They smash into an office. Undertaker stands up and he's got post-it notes all over his face. And then he spits a mouthful of thumb... Were they nails or drawing pins? I'm not sure what they were. So he spits a mouthful of drawing pins at Hulk Hogan, and they surround his head like cartoon bullets. Hulk Hogan says, for a big guy, you kind of lied on your freak. And he jams paper clips into the Undertaker's rocket boots. And he says, have a nice flight, camel breath. And Undertaker flies upwards, smashing through many, many floors of this building until he eventually smashes through a toilet that a lady is using in the ladies' toilet. And he comes out hilariously with the toilet wrapped round his face.
Again, for like 91, this movie is pure filth.
Knuckles drags Hogan through the floor. Hogan starts fighting him. And doing his grunt acting. Knuckles gets... He kills Knuckles. He throws him under a lift and he's just dead. Knuckles is dead. Taker then reappears with a toilet still on his head. Ah, comedy gold. Put your toilet... Now, when you come back in, put that toilet back on your head, mate. Hogan says, "What's this? A tag team?" It's an Earth reference. He wouldn't know what a tag team is.
He's been waiting all this movie, all the whole way through. He's been waiting to kill somebody, and he's got the bloodlust now.
Yeah. Then the Undertaker opens his mouth and he says, "You're a dead man, Ramsay," because he's got a squeaky little voice, and that's the whole joke as to why the Bounty Hunters don't talk. Hulk Hogan says, "So that's why you guys never talk. They've got the voices of children, Danny."
I honestly don't think that was ever the intention until it got to the editing stage and it was like, give him a little kid's voice.
Because it makes no sense.
No, they don't like reference the fact they don't talk or anything. It just, out of nowhere, he's got a kid's voice.
He dispatches the Undertaker with a Roger Rabbit style death when he just splats into a wall and he just says, "Game over, you lose." Now, the evil General Suter isn't dead, Danny. Don't worry, though. Don't worry. Hulk Hogan's got this covered. He sneaks into Charlie's house while Hogan is at the roller disco getting ready to leave. And he takes the family hostage. He takes the Wilcoxes hostage. This is where we now get the final showdown between Hulk Hogan and the evil Suter. Suter turns up at the roller disco holding the Wilcoxes hostage. Now, while Hulk Hogan, he sees himself in this predicament, he's like, "Oh, God, I need to save these Earthlings, because I think you're supposed to have warmed to them by this point, but he's still being pretty stroppy, to be honest." But
yeah, he didn't spend a whole lot of time with them either. He spent most of the time wandering around harassing people.
Yeah, he did, chucking cats about, and squeezing melons in old ladies' faces. Punching mind. So yeah, General Suter has found a photo of Hulk Hogan with the family. The photo when he's chomping down the cake and he's going, "You care about these Earthlings because you ate their Earth cake and you ate at their Earth table." And he's like, "Yeah, okay, take me. Sometimes you gotta lose to win," says Hulk Hogan, and he activates the ship's self-destruct and it's gonna blow up. Now Suter at this point turns into the full-on lizard monster, fully formed. He looks like the creature from... Have you seen Monster Squad?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon in that, yeah.
It looks like one of the aliens from Space Precinct. Like, completely out of the blue, doesn't fit the movie at all.
No, and I'd forgotten at this point that he does turn into a big green monster, because I remember that wasn't... there a version of the front cover that had the monster on it? I'm sure there was.
I wouldn't know, man. I've seen the tape of TV. I don't think I've ever seen an official case.
No. By the way, I had to actually buy this to to do it. I found I bought it. I found a shonky copy, but the shonky copy had gone, so I had to bite the bullet. So now I own a copy. It's gone into my vast collection of terrible, terrible films. It now belongs in there. It's on the shelf. Suburban Commando.
In your Hogan collection.
Yeah, in the Hogan. I have got a little Hogan section as well. So also at this point, Charlie finally learns confidence and he puts Shep's space gauntlet on that gives him the strength of 10 men and he crushes the evil space lizard's dick. And then Hogan defeats him with disco and electricity and the ship self-destructs. Hogan saves the day and now his plan is to fly home in the Bounty Hunter's ship. But not before, Danny. He's got to tie up a few loose ends, which one of the kids actually says to him, "Is everything finished?" "Yeah." "Got any loose ends to tie up?" "Yeah." He walks down the street and he sees the little girl from earlier on crying and he goes, "Again?" Aggressive with her about the cat. He pulls down the branch, the little girl grabs onto the branch and he flings her into space. He catches her mid-air and he says, "Just get a fucking goldfish. I've had enough of killing your cats or nearly killing you." The other loose end that he's got to tie up is the skateboard that he threw into space. He goes to see the skateboard kids. It turns out he's got his own skate. He does a Back to the Future 2. And he goes, "Have this." And he gives them a futuristic space skateboard. Not before he gives them a display to show them that he is totally radical on this skateboard, and he was obviously just having a bad day before, and he gives him that. He goes, "There you go, space skateboard." He flies off home, leaving the Wilcox. Charlie Wilcox now learned confidence. He tells his boss to fucking do one. Everything's safe. Hulk Hogan's gone back to space, and that's the end of the film. At the end of the film, Charlie goes to the troublesome traffic lights and he blows them up, much to the applause of all the people in the traffic.
So who's going to pay these bills? They couldn't pay their bills, so Charlie learns some confidence and he quits his job and then like causes public damage, and that's it.
Yeah, it's gonna, if anything, I don't know what the lesson is that he's learned. He's learned not to be a pushover, but he is going to have his house taken off him now.
He'll be on the streets.
Yeah, thanks for that there. Thanks for that pick there, Darko. It was I really did enjoy watching this. It's been a first time I've seen it in a long time, and it's the I think it's like the third Hulk Hogan film that we've done. We've done a lot of wrestling related films lately. We did actually, the one that goes out before this is Hell Comes to Frogtown with Rowdy Roddy Piper. So yeah, did you enjoy that film then, Danny?
Oh, I loved it. I still it's one of my favourites. Give me Hogan over The Rock any day. Give me Mr. Nanny, give me Santa and Muscles, give me Three Ninjas, High Noon. I'll take that over The Dying Gang or Rampage any day.
Wicked. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Darko.
No, man, it was good. I had fun.
Please tell everyone where anyone can get in touch with you on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that.
Yeah, cool. My Facebook and Instagram is Danny Darko UK. Twitter is The Danny Darko UK. You can head over and buy some t-shirts and help me out a big deal on www.dannydarkouk.com. And if you want to be super cool, you can check me out on Instagram under Chair Painting Freak.
Excellent. Oh yes, because you do your custom chairs as well, your custom wrestling chairs, which are fucking great.
Yeah, yeah, they're pretty cool. Like, if you're not a big wrestling fan, they probably don't mean nothing to you, but I seem to be getting a lot of good feedback on them.
Yeah, I think they're great, mate. But thank you for joining us this week on the show. Great to have you on, mate, and hopefully I'll get to see you in real life pretty soon, and not at the end of a Skype call. But thank you for joining us this week on Super Tap Film Club. Please don't forget to like and subscribe and do the things that I ask you to do every week. Please don't forget to check out our friends Laser Graves and all that lot. If you follow us on Instagram, we post all their stuff every now and again, well, every week, every time anything's on. So if you can, give those guys, Laser Graves, Bad Taste Video, Neon Brainiacs, everybody like that, give them a shout, because we're all doing this for free and we're keeping you entertained while you're all locked in your houses and trying not to go mad. Stay safe and we'll see you later.
Get the man in the moon. Look down on this place, this ball in space. Face to face, I say, Holmes, before you start dissing, check it out, see what you've been missing. Hear you shout till you drop, can't stop. Cop thrills on a 900 line, gives you chill. Rap on with the rapper, clap on with the clapper.
It's a nice place to live,
but I wouldn't want to visit.
Such a nice place to live.
Now,